This is Don Hussig and Lou Shepard with Loving the Earth, Environmental Revolution. We're doing a special program today for the radio series. And what it's all about, it's somewhat brainstorming, but we've talked about these things before, so it's also this matter of creating a record of what activists have to do to bring good change at a time like this. And what I'm meaning by a time like this is a time when the politicians, they will not listen to good, reasonable arguments, and they do not respond positively to efforts to bring good change, such as in our case, these reductions in exposure to pollution that causes cancer. So let's just jump into this, Lou. Just introduce yourself a little so people know who's talking here, because we're going to be heard over Vermont this afternoon, and we're going to be heard all over the world on the internet radio program, so people need to know who we are.
Okay, I'm Lou Shepard. I come to this cancer prevention education kind of thing, because my wife got cancer and died about 4 years ago, and I am very much involved and have been as a hobby in alternative medicine, and I supported my wife's treatment, even though I did not very much agree with it. I also have worked as a chemist for 32 years for one of the large chemical corporations. So I have that in my background, and I'm very much interested in eating locally, eating organically, and trying to live a way that will be good for the environment as well as good for me.
Well, I'm going to lay out a project that we've been working on for a long time now for the listeners. Cancer Action New York, Lou and I were at a meeting together in January of 2000 in the county seat. Canton is the county seat of St. Lawrence County, where we are localized. We're all about the St. Lawrence River Valley and the Adirondack Mountains, because those two parts of the geography come together here in St. Lawrence County. So Cancer Action New York got started in January of 2000, and our purpose was to prevent cancer by reducing exposure to pollution that causes cancer. Because there was so much pollution and so much cancer here, we knew that was the right thing to do, and that's what people wanted to do. As we proceeded, we began to discover that it was very difficult to prevent pollution, so we decided that we would add on to our pollution prevention work our efforts to educate the public about the pollution and the cancer risk imposed by exposure to pollution. And so we started up doing this outreach at schools, this educating the policymakers. We just did what we discovered we had to do to make any kind of significant progress. And the work we're doing right now focuses on a group of chemicals that we have concluded are some of the most important chemicals that people are exposed to that cause cancer. They're referred to as POPs, and POPs is an acronym for persistent organic pollutant. Organic in this case doesn't mean what Lou meant when he said the word organic a few moments ago. In this case, organic means organic carbon. It's organic is carbon chemistry. So it's organic, basically carbon-based pollution that causes cancer. And persistent means they last a long time in the environment and in animals' bodies, including these human animals that are talking to you now. We all have body burdens of POPs. POPs are toxic, man-made chemicals, many of which are known to cause cancer in animals, and a significant fraction of these animal carcinogens are also known to cause cancer in humans. And this matter of causing cancer in humans simply means that people have got exposed to these chemicals long enough that scientists have studied the matter and produced a large amount of epidemiological evidence upon which to base this classification. It's awful the way we had to wait till lots of people get cancer to be able to do anything about these chemicals, and so everything has to change. We have to change the paradigm. So what Lou and I want to talk to the listeners about and to each other about today is activism. You know, how can we motivate activism? Because we have discovered that the politicians are not ready to listen to the science, not ready to listen to common sense, not ready to go in the right direction based upon their own response to a few people coming to them and asking them to help bring good change. We cannot get our politicians to help us prevent cancer by reducing exposure to pollution, either by eliminating the pollution or minimizing it, or even making some small changes in the amount of pollution that's going out. We're having difficulty motivating that from the politicians, as well as we are having even probably more difficulty getting the politicians to help us educate the residents of our county about the pollution that causes cancer that they can avoid exposure to and reduce their cancer risk. So we're going to talk about how do we get more people involved, because that will make all the difference in the world. How do we do it, Lou?
Well, one of the things that I brought up in the Environmental Management Committee meeting was that we need to talk about this. And I think that that's one of the ways that we can enlist more people to be active in this project, is that we need to just continue to talk to people one-on-one on this particular subject. I remember many years ago when it was almost taboo to talk about cancer, and I think that has changed quite a bit. So my take on this is that we just need to talk about what we're trying to do and talk to as many people as we possibly can about it.
Well, speaking of that, you and I have a long-standing history and, you know, plans for the future of going to public places and doing that, just that, talking to each other, basically, and maybe having one or two other activists along, setting this example before the public eye of talking about pollution and cancer. And I was at the Canton Price Chopper. Price Chopper is a supermarket, a big supermarket line here in the North Country and around New York State, really. And I was at the Canton Price Chopper. I ran into the manager, and we're acquaintances because of the activism and his role as the leader there at the store. We've talked before about activism in public places. And I was mentioning to him that we were planning on eventually coming to the store, and with all good intention, and in certainly seeming not to be violating any kind of laws about, you know, behavior, and that we are just using our freedom of speech, that we would, you know, just walk through the store and do some shopping, and just add on talking to each other in a loud enough voice that other people reasonably nearby, say the people you're within 20 feet of, could hear clearly what we're talking about, and then they would realize that we were activists and that we were doing this to bring good change, and that, you know, they would just catch this fever, you know, this excitement that we have for being cancer prevention activists. So I've been talking to other people, Lou, and I think that Cheryl Warren, that's an associate of ours, who has been interested in doing this kind of work for a long time, and hopefully will become one of our allies in talking to people about reducing exposure to pollution, both the prevention angle and the avoidance of the exposure angle. She's starting to work on this. And then there's this Michelle Reed, who lives in a very, very cancer problem center, a cancer hotspot of our county, the township of Morristown. I've heard so many stories, seen so much about the problems, have experienced the pollution problems that exist in the township of Morristown, to the extent that I'm certain this is a place where the change really needs to be brought strongly. I'm so glad Michelle's over there talking to people, and she's going to come with us to the supermarkets. And we've also talked about doing these kind of cool, we like to be cool, you know, because being cool, it's more appealing and attractive than not being cool. Everybody knows this. So Lou and I have been talking, and I've also talked about it with Michelle and Cheryl, about making a movie And the way we make the movie is we talk to people about pollution and cancer, and we interview them in public places, and then everybody sees people, you know, making a movie, which is kind of cool, talking about pollution and cancer. So we're going to have to jump on that, and I'm part of the problem because I don't even know much about using my camera yet, but I'm intent upon working on that because I feel really excited, and it's excitement that brings these changes. So when should we either just get in a supermarket and do this conversation? Because, you know, really, what you and I are doing right now, if we were doing it in a supermarket, people would have heard us, you know, well, people are hearing us with the radio program, but it's kind of different being right there where they can see you, and it's right in that particular venue. It's more alive, really, and that's what we're looking for, alive, alive, alive. So I think part of this is that we need to, you know, pick some times where you and I and some of those girls are going to go to a supermarket, and when we're going to have the camera and go to a college campus and just talk to people about pollution and cancer and start, you know, just making this cooler, you know, more cool.
Well, Don, as you're talking about this, I think we're going to have somebody to handle that camera, because we can't be carrying on this conversation and working the camera at the same time.
That's true.
I think that,
I would be poor at that.
Yeah, right. So, I wanted to comment that you could almost call that Morristown area Cancer Alley because of all of the cancer that has occurred in that particular area of our county. And one of the problems that we've run into is not having the people that have the information about where these cancers occur in our county. They're not willing to come forth with the information about that.
That brings up this whole thing. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
Yep. Go ahead.
One of the things that we were planning on doing was to actually conduct a survey in that Morristown area. But then when we talked to some people about this, they said, well, that's already been done. So, but we have not been able to get that information.
This is a very central part of the problem. This is all about information. If you don't have information, you have no traction, no progress can be made. There's nothing to talk about even. It's all about having information and having good access to it. I'll tell you, I've had a little tiny bit of a success in that arena just recently. There's a lady by the name of Aura Weinstein. She works for the Cancer Surveillance Improvement Initiative with the New York State Department of Health. And she has these, you know, this good inroads, these good connections with the New York State Department of Health, both the Cancer Registry and the Freedom of Information Law officers. I had made a Freedom of Information Law request, Lou. I made it months ago. I'd basically made it in so long ago, and they didn't ever respond, or I don't remember their denial. But anyways, I'd never gotten the cancer data that I'd requested. And see, what I did was this. I requested to have yearly totals for zip codes. Because, see, this is not readily provided. That's not accessible on the Internet. The New York State Department of Health's Cancer Registry, they produce five-year time block incidence rates for a large number of cancers. But then when they do it for zip codes, they only do it for a few cancers. So this information will be much more powerful in determining whether cancer was on the increase in these particular zip codes. And the zip codes that I selected are the ones we've been talking about, this Morristown area, and then some surrounding zip codes, Oswegatchie, the zip code of Ogdensburg, New York, which is, it's pretty much, there's Hammond, and then there's Morristown, and there's Oswegatchie, and there's Ogdensburg, and there's Lisbon. And I'm getting those zip code cancer data, because when I talked to Earl Weinstein, she contacted the FOIL people, this Freedom of Information Law that we have in New York State that's very powerful if you use it. and you pursue it, and you endeavor to persevere in using it. She talked to them, and they said, okay, we didn't give it to them, but now we will give it to them because you've asked us to give it to them, because they knew that she was planning on doing a study, because there's a million ways, really, to get anything. You just have to pursue it victoriously. And so that's going to be good. It's going to be good. We'll have that data. That's going to come along. And you bringing this up caused me to remember another angle of all this activism. It's my understanding that there's a map on the wall of the Richard Winter Cancer Treatment Center in the city of Ogdensburg, New York, at the Claxton Hepburn Hospital. This is where hundreds, thousands of people go to be treated for cancer in the St. Lawrence River Valley. This is where people are now being turned away because there's so much cancer here. That facility cannot deal with it. This is a sister facility. Well, not really sister, but kind of a, they're not owned by the same corporation, the same hospital, but they're part of the same cancer treatment infrastructure. They send people to the Warner Cancer Treatment Center in Potsdam, which is about 30 miles away, over further east in the Adirondacks. And the Warner Cancer Treatment Center is now expanding, constructing a larger facility for treating cancer cases. It's so clear that cancer is increasing here, and I want to see what the hospitals know this. They're basing their investments on the infrastructure, on the knowledge that cancer is increasing. Well, I want to see more of that kind of data, and they won't give it to me. We've asked Jerry Shepard, the director of the Winter Cancer Treatment Center, to share this information that this map contains, to share the information that would be really more than just the map would contain, the records that have been submitted to the cancer registry. The New York State Cancer Registry obtains cancer records from hospitals that describe the kind of cancer, the age of the person, the residence of the person, all this very, very, very important information. And he will not share that with us. They say it's privacy. Well, privacy is important, but is it as important? People have to ask these hard questions. Is privacy as important as people that care having access to knowledge to use that knowledge for the power that is contained in it to bring change? We need to get more cancer data. And let's just, you know, just jump back to that survey. That survey that you brought up, we're going to survey as many residents of the township of Morristown as we can accomplish, meaning we need numbers. We need more numbers of people to help us do this. We're going to go door to door with a piece of paper, two sides of questions to obtain the information that the cancer registry will not give us, that the hospital will not give us. And they're saying, you know, you're wasting time. We already know this. Well, it's not waste our time because they may know it, but they won't share it with us. And we want to know it because we will do very differently with this information than they have been doing. We're not going to create infrastructure for treating cancer cases. We're going to use this knowledge to hammer away at the obstacles that are in our path of bringing the change of reducing exposure to pollution that causes cancer in the St. Lawrence River Valley.
Well, Don, one of the reasons for getting this information is to try to determine what really is causing these cancers.
Exactly.
And this is a very high agricultural part of the county. Well, the whole county is pretty much involved in agriculture, but certainly they use a lot of chemicals in that operation. So that would help us to try to determine what's really causing this. But the real problem in causation of cancer is that it happens just where one carcinogenic molecule reacts with one cell in the body, and this can take place many, many, many years before that cancer actually develops. So because of that time lapse, it's a big problem determining the causation.
Yep, cancer detectives have to be quite intelligent and quite hardworking to figure these things out. And I do want to say that I'll always feel like the scientists that do the epidemiology and do the, you know, the cancer causation research, you know, they deserve a lot of respect and honor. But we want to also encourage people to become what we do, what Lou and I are doing every day, and that's being cancer detectives. There's so much work for cancer detectives to do. It's all about, once you learn the names of the chemicals that are listed by the government as causing cancer, then you can start figuring out who is getting exposed to those chemicals, how much exposure is taking place, how much cancer is around there, whether there's a potential for reducing these exposures, and there always is. There is so much good work to be done on this part of the problem that involves investigating the actual exposures to the chemicals that are known to cause cancer, and then using that knowledge to move forward on exposure reduction. Everybody, truly, if everybody on Earth was doing a cancer detector job for one day a week, it wouldn't be too much, because everybody has used chemicals and been exposed to these various agents like the RF and the EMF and the nuclear radiation in these various parts of the world, of the physical chemical world that we have come to know are involved in causing cancer. There's so much of that around, and people are so casually exposing themselves. Well, exhaust, formaldehyde, benzene, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, and exhaust. There's a very large amount of work for cancer detectives, and we are just super interested in finding some young people especially. They have bright minds. They have excitement. They want to bring change. We were just talking before this recording started, talking about how we're going to get some proteges in the schools that want to follow our good example and become the best cancer detectives. You know, I think of myself as a chief cancer detective, and Lou's a chief cancer detective. Well, we want some, we need some Indians too, you know, some people that we can guide in becoming cancer detectives, because it's very important and it's fun. It's exciting. It's cool. We're going to call it Cool Cancer Detectives and just see how that flies in the schools. So we're making progress, Lou. I can feel it. We're making progress.
Well, we're making progress, but it's pretty slow.
It is very slow.
And,
let's talk about one more
thing, too, because, it's a subject that, most people would like to not talk about, and that is cancer prevention. And I remember in my experience at in working in the field that we worked with a lot of chemicals, and we knew some of the hazards of them. For example, when we worked with carbon tetrachloride, we used a fume hood when we were using it, so that it didn't, so we didn't inhale it. We know that's a compound that really is very bad on the liver. And but the problem here is that the industry has introduced about 80,000 chemicals into the environment, and very few of them have ever been really tested for safety. And so that's a big problem. And just recently I read that a dye, a red dye, was found to cause cancer when they were testing it on rats. So they took it out of cosmetics, but it's still used in food. And that seems to be okay. And I,
does that seem crazy?
That is kind of goofy. Crazy. Yep. So, and when I get into that part of the discussion, why it reinforces my thinking that the FDA is not protecting the people. And
the FDA is not protecting the people. That's something that I've discovered. I agree with you 1,000%. The FDA, let's repeat this. Let's both of us repeat this in unison. The FDA is not protecting the people.
Protecting the people. And as an example of that, the hazards of asbestos were known in 1897, and most people know that it took many, 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 many years before they start putting restrictions on its use. So that's just an example of how ineffective the organizations that have been set up to protect the people, just how ineffective they really are.
And this is truly all about one thing. It is about money. Money is great when you use it for good purposes, such as having shelter and good organic, clean food that doesn't have a whole lot of pollution in it. It costs more to get that kind of food, and it's good to have the money to buy it. So I'm not running down money, but the problem with money is that some people get addicted to having way too much of it, and then that's all they care about. And this greed thing is rampant in our country. It's caused all the harm that we've been talking about for the past half hour, and it continues because it's so entrenched and people are so into it. It continues to cause the same kind of harm over every day. Today it will cause the harm that we're talking about. There'll be more chemicals introduced. There'll be people carelessly using chemicals. There'll be people exposed to chemicals. They'll get cancer today because of this money problem that we have in our country. Somehow, we need to cause people to stop, look at their greed, realize it's wrong, realize it's harming people, because the evidence is in. The reports have been written. The knowledge has accumulated. People now know that careless use of chemicals because of greed has caused a huge amount of cancer and other diseases. Now is the time for people to stop, evaluate, change their mind, have a spiritual revolution, an emotional revolution, a mental revolution, and start being cancer detectives to atone for all their bad behavior. And I know that sounds like preaching, but preaching was done for the reason that it was needed. It is needed. I don't care how out of fashion it is. Preaching is good because it's good people trying to convince people that need to become better to change.
Yeah, well, that's right, Don. And there's a lot of ways that people can get information, certainly on the Internet, about alternatives to doing a lot of things. And one area that I think of is just in the chemicals that we use in the house. We can check those out and find some alternatives to use for cleaning and that sort of thing, and probably could save some money in the process of doing that. So I certainly would recommend that.
Yep. Let's wrap this up, Lou. You were telling me that you were going to have to jump on some work you do today.
I gotta be going soon.
Yep, you do this important work of going to the supermarkets and getting the produce that is going bad and then making use of that to have it composted and not just be thrown in a landfill someplace. And that's keeping the landfills less, filling up and having to have a new landfill, and that's important work. So I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
Thanks so much for jumping in with me. We're going to start doing this a lot because I love doing this. You and I were born this way. We're superstars, and we're so good at talking to each other about bringing the good changes that will create cancer detectives and create cancer prevention, pollution prevention, exposure reduction activists, which is exactly what the world needs right now in large numbers. So let's wrap it up. This has been Don Hassig and Lou Shepherd. We're members of Cancer Action New York. We're also producers of Loving the Earth Environmental Revolution, which is produced by Cool Cancer News Network. Thanks to everybody for listening, and viva the revolution.